unalu intertribal fish commission nanak biluni bilgatali unani a kailin ayo kutsit nag makut nakit maabat kuskuk pagamun kautlgit kawani na kutait kwani asu wira mi bilgatali tamak tamak unik ni taklu tapiji kukut kali naga kluji pinnahtuji apkaguluk ka a taim toa kail pitalgam kongu tapika takchta unakwani kwatin pilas khput taim aru lagluni pichik ngatukka toot na yukukka agan katurakum na atan khput ta kpuriluni makuni kpemi khwankutakwa khwankutnun maani mamtrilkham kuskukbim kuihbim unanil changinagni witalgani unani chikuni shootput makuunik nallunirit naqlxaanik khonkuta atuqkamtnik niisuwikput ta illai taim programmat the ones that we have gotten used to are no longer going to be on air due to cuts, so just to give you people heads up of what's happening with KYUK. But I'll have Tris introduce herself and Sam. Go ahead, Tris.
Yeah, Koyana Sam. Good afternoon. This is Tris Vicente with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, and I'm grateful for the sunshine today.
Oh, yeah, beautiful weather. Mm-hmm.
This is Sam Decker. I'm the Kuskokwim Area Management Biologist for Fisheries with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
You were out of town.
Yes.
I'd like to hear a little bit about it and how it was.
The last 2 weeks I have been doing aerial surveys all over the Kuskokwim River, and in fact they're still ongoing right now. Madison, who's been here for the last couple of weeks, she is currently out getting an aerial survey on the Kinnektok and Aralic Rivers. And the pilot we're working with is highly experienced. We're really glad to have him available to us. But I started back on the 22nd of July up in McGrath, and we surveyed all the way down to Aniak. In Aniak, we got stuck for a couple of days due to weather, and yesterday we decided to give up on the rivers that we were waiting for and fly down the main stem Kuskokwim. We were able to grab the Keys Aralic yesterday, which was great. Gorgeous area, beautiful sightability on the fish. The sunshine was breaking through the clouds. There was almost no wind. We saw several people out enjoying some rafting, which was really fun. Mm-hmm. Incredible waterfalls up there. Looks like a really fun place to go. Anyways, and then we came down to Bethel last night. So we'll be working out of Bethel from now until about August 3rd, trying to get all of the remaining rivers that are on our list. Largely, we've had very good conditions for viewing the fish, meaning that the water clarity is good, not very many wind making riffles across the surface of the water that can make seeing down into the water difficult. We've had really good luck with the sun and the timing so that there's not a lot of glare on the surface of the river, and not too much trouble with wind that makes it difficult to control the plane in a safe way that allows us to work from the right side of the river or the left side of the river to get the right angle to combat all of those other problems that we might have on the river. The reason why we take note of all of that data every time we do an aerial survey is because if we're flying over the river but we can't see the fish well, then even though we're doing the aerial survey, we may not use that data. And so it is really fortunate when we're able to do the aerial survey during the peak spawning time and all of those environmental factors line up so that the data is good quality data. We did have two rivers that I thought were very interesting. Last year, people were mentioning how the Aniak River was cloudy like chocolate milk, mm-hmm. and the main stem Cusco was clear, and that that was reversed from how it usually is. This year, we noticed that the Aniak River, starting from the lake, was nice and clear until we got about halfway down. There's a point in a high cut bank where silt is pouring out from underneath the cut bank, and it works its way downstream until it is clouding up the entire river and makes it impossible to see any king salmon. We saw maybe four after that point because they were up in very shallow areas. We did see big balls of sockeye salmon because they, when they're 50, 75 sockeye salmon all balled up together, it's easier to see that big dark ball through 5 feet of silty water. So we were able to note how many balls of sockeye, but we couldn't count the sockeye either. So that's one of the examples of a river where we won't be able to use that data, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. That silty water that you're talking about, when my dad was alive and commercial fishing was going on here in the Cusco Quim, that's what he used to wait for the water to happen so the nets won't be visible for the fish to avoid. I'm not surprised that's happening in that river, Aniak River, because my dad used to say that soot coming out of the cliff, that area.
Yeah.
That's what my dad used to talk about.
Ah.
And the word that he used was kagakaluni. Something starts to come up and sits all the water.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's good to know. Finally, I'm hearing something that I used to hear when I was a boy. Wow.
Yeah.
Tris, do you have anything that you want to throw at our listeners here?
Sure. I'll start by just reminding folks of the federal fishing openers that were announced last week in case people missed the memo. Though always shout out to KYUK for sharing these on the air really regularly and to the reporters for covering them as well. So fishing with gill nets, 6-inch, you know, same length restrictions we've seen all year, is open in federal waters from the mouth of the Cusco Quim up to the Kalskag line right now until 11:59 p.m. tonight, so basically till it turns August, because we're the last day of July. And then it'll close down again, but reopen next Tuesday, August 5th, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Also right now, rod and reeling in all federal waters of the Cusco Quim drainage, including salmon-bearing tributaries like Eek and Guifluk and Gizaralik, Kasigaluk, as well as the Aniak Box and federal waters of the Aniak River from the mouth up to the Buckstock. Those are open to rod and reeling by federally qualified subsistence users, pretty much local full-time residents. So, and those people can they can harvest any fish they catch. So, I know that's come at a good time for people who like to get out and rod and reel for silvers, and the community of Aniak has their annual derby, so they're happy about that. And our co-management team, the Fish Commission, tribal in-season managers, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are having a meeting next Wednesday, August 6th, to assess the coho salmon information we've been getting, including harvest information from next week's opener, and then determine any more fishing opportunities for federally qualified subsistence users. So just letting folks know they can stay tuned. Spencer Reardon, the refuge manager, and his team have been doing a good job turning around those opener announcements pretty swiftly after the meetings. And then our team works really hard to get those out ASAP so that people can know and plan for fishing days. So we'll know more, we hope, next Wednesday, August 6th, about more openers and federal management. So just wanted to remind folks of that. And then just thinking about the aerial survey information that Sam shared about, it's exciting. They've been able to do aerial surveys and get good data this year. The weather's mostly cooperated. This year, we've been working with, I call him our drone guy. He's a postdoctoral student named Danny Auerbach out of Washington State University. Last year, he helped us test out using drones up the Guithuk River to see if we could capture, you know, photos and videos of the Guithuk using drones and then count salmon spawners through that. He's even, with his lab down at Washington State, he's even been looking into using deep learning or artificial intelligence, AI, training those computer systems to recognize fish by color and size and count them rather than having people do it manually. This year, he's looking at using stationary camera systems, basically setting up a camera on a tripod. He's doing it up at the Salmon Aniak River Weir that the native village of Nepaimute runs. He's been doing it up there. And he gave us a report a couple weeks back and said, from the photo and video that he's pulled out in the field, he's already been able to see fish through his camera system, count them, identify them by species, see, you know, the kings, the sockeye, things like that. And he's coming out of the field tomorrow, and then he'll head back down to Washington and start to, you know, look at all the video that he caught. But it's exciting. We're hoping that, you know, if this system works, we're just testing it this year. We're going to be working with communities throughout the watershed this fall to see about expanding it for next field season. But it'd be exciting to, you know, if it does work and it does count pretty accurate numbers of fish compared to the weir, compared to aerial surveys, things like that, to be able to implement it in other tributary systems throughout the watershed, including ones that don't have weirs going on right now or that we're not able to get aerial surveys done because of water conditions or weather conditions. So our goal is to try to fill in some of these gaps in the data so we know what's going on with our salmon so that our managers and our local people that sit at the management tables can have the best information at their fingertips as we're trying to rebuild salmon and conserve them, but also, mm-hmm. you know, protect people's fishing traditions and things like that. So it's exciting. I'm hoping Danny would be interested in talking with KYUK or coming on Fish Talk soon. So I'll work with him on that because it'd be great to share more about his work.
Yes. And what is it called again? That's a new one on me.
Yeah, it's we're calling it a camera-based salmon spawner assessment program.
But so there's no actual name to it yet.
No, we don't have a project name. Uh-huh. If you think of one, let us know.
Eyeball. No. Yeah, I could away a kalagot kluki big kaita unahoni sam decker tingaguluni mani kuskok fim awatini pilminik report tahtuk away a kanakin kuskok fim painganuni pakabata a kawabatikiluni and unasu aniak paks tam mani an yaram sukui got pilre a report that fog isn't helping very much in the morning hours, I bet, because it's been foggy when we were picking bears.
Yeah, the fog in the morning has been putting us on weather delay for the last 5 days.
Yeah, pretty thick.
Yeah, and we found that it kind of got stuck in the mountains around the Aniak area. And so yesterday we followed the river down because Madison was letting us know that it was clear and sunny in Good News Bay, and so we knew it would be getting better on the coast soon, so we came down to do that. Yeah.
When you're up near the mountain areas, the Kilbuck area, those lakes up there are not very far apart. Where
The mountains are very steep. Mm-hmm. It looks, I'm not a geologist, but from what I remember from 25 years ago when I started taking college classes and I took a geology class, it looks like they're carved by glaciers. Mm-hmm. And so they're very steep mountains and so very small watersheds. And you'd go, we were flying through ridge after ridge after ridge of the mountains and big, beautiful lakes up there.
Yeah. Blue water. Mm. Yeah, we flew around that area one time.
Yeah.
And I was surprised to see how steep they were. Mm.
Yeah, very steep mountains. I took some pictures. We'll be posting them on our Facebook page because it's really pretty.
Cool. People need to see that area for themselves to say, wow.
Yeah, and these falls, we'll put some pictures of these waterfalls from the Kisaralik on our Facebook page. Steep. Mm-hmm. These king salmon, we were counting the king salmon above the falls and below the falls, and the king salmon are making it up. Yeah, they're so amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're strong fish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aerial surveys are one of the most dangerous projects that we do, and that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about this camera-based monitoring system. When I spoke with Danny Auerbach last year, he said that he had been working with the State Department in Idaho and that they had been able to give up their aerial surveys in order to, you know, protect people and use those drone-based systems. So I'm excited about the potential.
Yeah, and if I could, Sam, we're at this point, we're not looking to replace anything yet, you know, like we still rely on our aerial surveys and our weirs.
A long process of correlating that data.
But hopefully it works so that, you know, I mean, using cameras or using drones, it's not just safer, it's also a lot cheaper. It's easier to train local people how to use them. We know there's a lot of up and coming drone pilots in our region already. A lot of young people especially are really interested in that. And it's also less invasive for the environment oftentimes, you know, like weirs obstruct, you know, a whole tributary, you know, not just for the fish, but also for boaters, for other species that want to get through. So these things are a little bit, they have less of an impact on the environment. So there's a lot of things going for them. So we're really hoping that it works out, that the data seem good and strong, and that we can keep testing this in other river systems next year too.
Yeah, so if you're a young person and you like to play games, this is it, you know.
Like a real life video game.
And it's live, you know. Let's go after fish, you know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think when we put two or three people in one plane, there's always a chance of that plane going down somewhere. It rarely happens, but when it does, it's tragic.
Yeah.
But with drones like this, we even have a couple of them down at the search and rescue department.
Yeah.
I'd like to see this guy to see if he can get one of ours to start working.
Oh.
We have a fairly large drone. But the camera system, for some reason, isn't working too well. Mm. So we'd love to get it working, and that would be a real plus for us when we need to see where we need to go safely to get to a person that is in distress. Interesting. We're getting off the subject from fish. But anyway, akuna awai iki kusuki pikatashitali unanikus kokpakmi. Jamai iking kauk until matum igalum lang sa 31st Tony 7 PM. It's closing?
Tonight 11:59 PM. All the way
tonight.
Through the end of the day. Yep.
Ataku Unuku 11 o'clock nuni tamana kaukan umgah kaugok tos atamikihluni August 2nd for 12 hours.
August 5. Next Tuesday.
Okay. August 5 amikihluni for 12 hours atam. It was convenient for me to be while it was open 24/7 for a while, it, just to go out, just to get supper.
Yep.
You know, you just get one or two. The thing that maybe I'm not really puzzled about it, but I haven't seen very many fishermen out there.
Mm.
Not very many. One or two, maybe, sometimes.
That's what I've been hearing from the working group members, is that people seem to be pretty happy with the number of fish that they have, and they're moving on to other things. And
Berry season.
Mm. Yeah.
Salmon berry season has kicked in, and it won't be over for the rest of the season.
Right.
You know, there's salmon berries, there's blueberries.
I noticed the blackberries were ripe as well. Mm. They were delicious when we were stopping to stretch our legs on the aerial surveys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would be something. I love blackberry agoudux,
so
I'll be looking forward to picking blackberries. Yeah. You have something to report there, Sam.
I do have the updated numbers from the sonar.
Oh, great.
If folks are interested. The total numbers, I think people are probably most interested in the coho right now. So we had another 8,000 coho pass the sonar yesterday.
Mm.
And that brings us to a total of 144,000 coho pass the sonar, which is more than 50% of the average run.
Mm.
And so that's looking like a very good coho run this year.
Yeah.
So if folks are looking for coho, take advantage of the rest of this federal opener to go and get a few.
Yeah, we do our canning with silvers. Mm. So we're looking forward to some openers if they happen to are presented to us. We'll certainly be going out there. I have a brand new net that I just hung, and I'm eager to set it out and see what happens. Sam?
Yeah, this is Therese with the Fish Commission.
Therese.
No,
sorry.
Oh, you're good.
Sorry.
You're good. I'm organizing my thoughts. So as in the past couple years, since the Intertribal Fish Commission and Fish and Wildlife Service have been co-managing the coho salmon after that really bad 2022 crash when everything was shut down across the river. We've been trying to take a precautionary approach to coho salmon management. So I know yesterday at the working group meeting, Sean Larson with the department shared about the sonar project numbers, and that Fish and Game has been getting maybe more accurate numbers this year with a fourth sonar unit.
Yep, that's correct.
But using the methods from the last couple years with only three sonar units, I did just want to share the numbers I saw from Sean's latest assessment this afternoon. We're at 102,000 coho. Yeah,
okay,
I'll pause.
Yep. We have a caller online from here in Bethel. Jeff, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm, loud and clear.
Okay. I was listening to conversation about weirs and salmon integration air surveys, and thought I'd add some personal experience I had, and things were somewhat, I'm not saying better, they were just different, and I was appreciative of the science at the time. In the summer of 72 and 73, I worked on a tower project on the Kogrokluk, where we were only counting Kogrokluk fish. The present day project that referred to as Kogrokluk counts some of the main stem hullet fish as well as shotgun fish. So, anyway, it wasn't a weir, it was a tower.
Mm.
And one of the interesting things about it to me was that we were acting as a control for area surveys, in that we had a what we assumed was a very accurate count of the fish that were above our tower.
Sir, can we have you set off your radio? There's an echo.
Certainly. Just a second. I thought I was far enough away from it. That wouldn't happen.
Okay, all right. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, anyway, we had it was assumed we had a very accurate count of the fish that were above our tower. So one of the first things that would happen with area surveys in that area in streams similar to ours in the area of ours is when they flew the aerial survey, they'd fly that area above our tower and get a count and a species breakdown. And then they would compare that to the numbers we counted. And they would use that, they'd use our count as a control and then use it to determine the accuracy of the aerial survey. So if we had the kind of day where the light was such that maybe it was hard to see the chums, or maybe and the aerial survey counted maybe only half the chums that they flew over in the area above our tower, they would use that to adjust all the other surveys in the area that day on similar streams. And I was just impressed. Just wanted to add that to your conversation because I was very impressed with the science that was there. It was simple, but it seemed very logical.
Mm-hmm. Jalika, do you have anything else?
Well, I'd also ask, several weeks ago I asked for the ASL numbers out of the sonar, and I was wondering if you had the genetics or and whatever you need, the scales or whatever, if you have the analysis of that back yet.
Mm-hmm. Hold on a bit.
Yeah, let me look through my notes. I know I had grabbed that. Actually, I'd like to thank you because that was a really good explanation of the kind of things that we're considering when we're doing our aerial surveys, and in fact, all of our data collection is comparing it to some kind of control, comparing it to other projects, comparing it to other years and other areas with similar conditions. And that's all part of the review of any of our scientific data. We had been talking about the age structure of the fish at the sonar, I'm trying to remember. And we were talking about, if I recall, it was whether the main age was 4, 5, or 6 years old. Is that correct?
In a previous conversation, that's what I was talking about. I felt that, and the reason why I was after this, curious about this other data, I felt that in my own fishing, which is a very, very small sample, that I was seeing a lot more 5-year-old kings than usual. And I was also seeing, and I've heard this from other fishermen, a lot more large, and this was even a smaller sample than the king, as far as my own catch went, but I was seeing more large chum salmon. And it was my assumption they were probably 5 instead of 4s. But it was just an assumption, and it's on much less, a much smaller sample than what you'd have from the sonar. That's why I was interested in the ASL.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I do not have the packet of information with me that has the ASL information from the sonar. I thought that I had grabbed it. If you look back on our website, and if you go back to the preseason...
Is this the state website?
Mm-hmm. If you can Google the keywords, you know, ADF&G, Alaska, Salmon, Working Group, and it should take you to a web page where it has all of the records from all of our working group meetings. And if you look back at the pre-season meeting, that happened on May 28th this year, I think. It was May 27th or May 28th. Look back at that day and you'll find the packet. Oh, maybe Teresa's working frantically on her phone to find the information.
I look at the state's website almost daily.
That's fantastic.
I was hoping to see it there.
Do you see the working group?
Maybe I just don't know where to look.
Do you know where the working group meeting information is?
I've seen that. I haven't checked it.
Okay. Well, Therese was able to find it. And so I'm looking at it on her phone. Thank you so much, Therese.
You're welcome. So
this is for the king salmon. And this is regarding the 2024 run and how it compares to the average for all of the years of our data, which is starting in 1976 to 2003. And so the 2024 run was about 45% age four and about 39% age five and maybe 12% age six. So comparing to the average...
You don't have any 2025 numbers?
No, we won't have that information until about February. We're still collecting those samples right now.
Is it a factor of just when you submit the data or having a different lab? Because I know on the Yukon, they do the same thing, and they report their numbers weekly. So they're getting a much faster data return is what it sounds like.
Yes, I spent the last 14 years working on the Yukon. And that's something that we have worked out over the years. We had we have a gene conservation lab, and we have a scale reading lab in Anchorage. And so all of the scales from all over the state go to the same place, and they have some extremely skilled people reading those scales and getting data back to us. The priority of the project depends on a bunch of different things. So, for example, down in Bristol Bay, they're using that to make daily management decisions for hundreds of commercial fishermen who have the ability to have a drastic impact on different runs. And so that would be a high priority project to read those scales. On the Yukon, where there are issues about meeting treaty negotiations with Canada, and especially regarding the king salmon and the fall chum, which are the only salmon species that are available to the upper river of the Yukon in Alaska side and to the Canadian First Nations, that becomes a high priority project. On the Kuskokwim, the runs are fairly stable. And so we are a lower priority project when we are directing the time and efforts of reading hundreds of thousands of scales.
I see. So yeah. It's just a matter of stepping where we are on the priority list.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that is a part of it. If you would like to send me an email, I am always curious about citizen science. And if you would be interested in taking some scales from the fish that you're catching, I'm not sure where you are on the river. Are you down near Bethel, or are you?
We live in Bethel, and we usually fish close to Bethel.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's something I'm curious about. So if you think you're seeing 5-year-old fish, it would be fun to have some of your scales so we could see if that's what you're seeing. Otherwise, we have to wait until all of the data gets processed.
We not only thought they were 5-year-old, but another encouraging outcome was a lot of them had eggs.
Oh, good. Lots of females? That's an interesting thing, is that, again, looking at the 2024 data, the ratio of females to males was the same last year as it has been on average from 1976 through 2003.
That is good news, isn't it?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do when we get the ASL data is we do, you know, while we're presenting very simple tables in a public meeting, when it's a small part of what we're discussing, internally, we do look at how the age composition and the sex ratio compares year by year by year. And that's part of what helps us to understand when we say things like, this year looks like 2019, this year looks like 1983. The age composition and the sex ratio are some of the things that we take into consideration when we're making statements like that. Because that has a lot to do with how big the fish are, how many eggs are getting onto the spawning grounds, and what impact that might have for forecasting and for sibling relationships. A sibling relationship is what we call it, even though they're not, they're kind of siblings. when a fish comes back as a three-year-old, next year their siblings will come back as four-year-olds, then their siblings will come back as five-year-olds. And so if the three-year-olds had a high survival rate, because most of the mortality happens in the freshwater as between the egg and smolting stage. And so if the three-year-olds have a high survival rate, we predict the four-year-olds will also have a high survival rate. Then we predict the five-year-olds will also have a high survival rate. So we start stacking that information when we're making our forecasts. I really appreciate your work on a counting tower. I also worked on a counting tower for 10 years.
I really appreciate it. Looking back, it was some of the finest years of my life.
Me too.
Just really enjoyed the work, enjoyed everything about it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that this camera-based monitoring project will bring back, is that kind of setting. Another thing that the camera-based monitoring project could provide would be the ability to review data, to use it as training materials, and to have it documented so that in the future, if there were other questions that came up, we could refer back to those videos and glean more information from that data. That's something that we do as well in our gene conservation lab, where they do genetics work. We started the Salmon Genome Project in the 1980s. We've been doing it ever since. We maintained certain samples, hundreds of thousands of samples, so that as the technology got better and cheaper, we could go back and reanalyze some of that data. So that we didn't have to start all over again collecting samples from, you know, every pink salmon tributary, every coho salmon tributary, every chum and king salmon tributary.
Raj, good ideas. I think I'm not starting to monopolize your show, and I know my ideas, I could talk to you for hours about this. It's fascinating, but I think probably Sam would like to have some other callers.
I'll just call in. If you don't mind me just speaking for every single manager on the river, whether they're fish commission, federal, or state, this is our job. We love to talk about salmon. And if anyone anywhere on the river has questions, I encourage you to reach out to your local salmon manager and ask your questions, have these discussions, because, you know, a research biologist's job is to do research. A manager's job is to talk to people. So please, if you have
management decisions based on the research.
Yes. Yep. That as well. But to communicate that, and to
and
take into account what we're hearing from people.
Right there too.
Yeah.
You're looking at it.
Yep. And so, you know, I know that this radio program reaches people from Good News Bay to Eek to Congiganak to Aniak to Nikolai. Wherever you are, contact your local manager if you have questions or if you're seeing something that you don't think is being taken into account in the data or in the management.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Thank you for your explanation. It's been very helpful.
My pleasure.
Thank you for calling. Tris, do you have anything to add to what was being discussed here?
No, not to that conversation. It was a really good one, though. But I wanted to get back to the silver salmon numbers before our show wraps up. So there's two counts going on at the Kuskokwim sonar right now this year for our silvers, and the sonar is really the only in-season information besides harvest estimates that we help produce at the Fish Commission, and besides people's local and traditional knowledge about the runs and community updates and things like that. So one count using four sonar units, maybe getting more of the river, more accurate counts, which is exciting, is a little over 144,000 coho past the sonar as of yesterday. A second count using just three sonar units, which is what's been done in the past, is just over 102,000 coho salmon past the Bethel area. So there's about a 40,000 fish difference there. Both of those are above the recent average, which is good news. And we know just from people's reports and hearing from old timers and elders, seems like the coho are really early this year. My boss, our executive director at the Fish Commission, Kevin Whitworth, lives up in McGrath, and he runs a fish wheel up there in the summer. And he caught a silver salmon a couple days ago and was talking with an elder in his community who said that's incredibly early.
Unusual.
Yeah. So we know that it's an early silver salmon run, that they seem really strong right now. The average from the last four or so years, 2020 to 2023, is about 32,000 coho at this time. So we're above average, but I do just want to note that some of those years are some really poor coho salmon years. Mm-hmm. Like 2022 was record low. We've seen declines in coho salmon on the Kuskokwim since 2018. And we don't have sonar data from before 2018 for coho salmon to compare these two. So it's a bit of an anomaly this year with uncertainty in the data, with seeing a really early and seemingly really strong run right now. But we also saw this year the Kings and the Chums showed up fairly early, showed up really strong, and then kind of slowed down a little bit. People got harvest and they were able to get a lot of what they needed, which is awesome. But we ended up, you know, getting still below average run sizes for Kings and Chums. So I say all this just to share with the public that this is what our Fish Commission and Fish and Wildlife Service and our co-management are keeping in mind. I'm sure the state's keeping it in mind too as they're making management decisions, but this is why we still have federal conservation closures in the lower Kuskokwim, because we just have a lot of uncertainty about how the silvers are really going to be this year. And when we have a lot of uncertainty, we like to just take it one step at a time, wait till we have a clearer picture of what's going on. So that's why there's still closures. That's why we've announced some openers, because it does seem like, you know, silvers are in fairly strong right now.
144,000. Yeah.
So we want local people to harvest. So there's an opener next Tuesday for that reason. There's rod and reel opportunities for people that like to get out and use those to harvest some dinner or some fish for jarring.
Yes.
But we're still tapping the brakes right now until we get closer to the midpoint of the silver salmon run, have a little bit more sonar data, have some more community reports, some more harvest reports. So I just wanted to share that with folks because I know people are starting to get interested as maybe they're filling their berry buckets and thinking about silvers now, kind of what's going on, what's coming down the pipeline. And we'll just continue to keep people posted about any opener decisions that are made as soon as we know.
We've been hearing some good numbers on most of the species that we, and I know that I cut you off earlier when you were doing the numbers on you were just getting over the and you had more. I know you had more, but I had to get something out of my to hear it from her. But
yeah,
if you can
okay.
get those numbers again,
sure.
Let's finish them off.
I had some whitefish numbers that I was also going to report, but I'd like to go back to this really good point that Therese brought up. About if you're looking at our working group packets, you'll see 2025A and 2025B. And so we're really only counting coho as we see them. So I want to explain a little bit more detail about why we're presenting the numbers using 3 sonar and 4 sonar. So if folks, especially those in Guithluk, when they're going by our sonar site, you'll notice the reason that we moved our camp is because of all of the erosion that's been happening at that location. We've lost at least 20 feet of bank. So while the erosion has been working the river wider and wider and wider, the sonar that we had started producing this gap, this blind spot where they couldn't count the fish. And so it got to the point where we had to get another sonar unit. Sonar units are incredibly expensive and a lot of technical detail. One of the reasons why our sonar camp is so large and so many people is that it takes that many people with the technical knowledge to keep that equipment running and to troubleshoot the equipment when it starts to fail. The 2025A number with 144,000 total coho going by, that is the real number of coho that have passed the sonar. When we're doing our apportionment fishing, we're counting all of the fish on the sonar. We're using our apportionment nets to verify that those are indeed coho. So that is the real number. Because this 144,000 number is so hard to compare, as Therese said, to our recent average of 32,000. That's why we're presenting this 2025B column, because this 2025B column represents that same blind spot in the river where we could not count fish before because our equipment didn't reach into that area. And so if you're looking at the average 32,000, that would compare to this 102,000 fish number because the blind spot is the same in those years. But we feel that it's important to look at the 144,000 number because that is the actual number of coho that we're seeing go by.
And that's this year.
That's this year, yeah. So as Therese said, what this means, right? It could mean the fish are early and strong, but then it turns into nothing. Or it could mean something else. The 144,000 coho represent what has already passed the sonar. So that is a firm number when we're looking at what does this mean? The average 50% run passage time for coho is August 17th. So will the run continue to be strong through the traditional run timing? We don't know. That would be an astronomical number of fish. Because if you take where we are right now, we've already surpassed the 50% run timing with our numbers. So the question is, what does it mean through the normal run timing of coho? But in reality, we've had 144,000 coho go by.
Yeah, and that's a good explanation of just the challenges that our in-season fishery managers face. We just never know until afterwards what happened.
So, I say it's the art of the science.
Yeah. We definitely hope it'll be a strong run, though. We hope there'll be lots of fishing opportunities for people, but we just need to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. It really is early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's an early run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The average run for coho, for the whole season of coho, is 236,000. And so we're already past halfway point when you compare the 144,000 to the average total run size.
But you can't compare those because the 2024 number is different. So we're close to halfway using the 2025 B count, which you could compare to that average.
The 2024, the sonar didn't even cover any of the coho, and that's why it's missing from this table.
Right. I'm sorry, I should phrase this as a question. I'm reading this. The average is the 2020 through the 2023 counts.
Correct.
And so our comparable number for this year is 2025B, which is about 102,000 silver salmon.
Oh.
So we're just shy of 50% what we see at the end of the sonar, which doesn't count the whole coho salmon run because it ends before all the cohos pass
it's
through.
It's just beginning.
Yep.
It's just beginning to, from what I know.
Yeah.
From the past.
Thank
as
you.
A fisherman.
Yeah. Thank you for that correction, Therese. Yeah. You're right, because that 236,000 average fish from 2020 through 2023 is including that same blind spot.
Yep, exactly.
Where we couldn't
That's
count
how
fish.
I was understanding it.
So, yeah, so that would be a low number from what went by.
And then there's more silvers that go by through
October.
Yeah. That we don't count. Yep.
Yeah, there was one time when we were ice fishing right after freeze up when I caught a silver on a hook, fishing for pike.
A straggler.
November. You know, that was, he was a, he probably thought he was a pike, you know.
Yeah. Was it in good shape?
Yes.
Wow.
We had it for supper when I got home.
Delicious.
It was good. Huh. But anyway, We've had our first silver caught maybe like on the second or third opener down here. Someone reported a silver in one of their catches.
Wow!
So, and I told this, I told my friend at fish camp across there, my aunt's husband Russell. I think we're going to have a good silver run this year. So
sure hope so.
And we haven't had these real strong south winds yet.
Yeah. Are there natural indicators that would predict a strong coho run that you've seen?
Early catches. When there's really early catches, I've seen them in my lifetime maybe two times now so far. Mm. And back in the 80s when there was a strong run, same thing happened. And this was during commercial fishing time, and we had strong runs way into September. I had a good catch on the very last opener that they had it. I got a good catch that year.
Good. So I was going to say some about whitefish.
Yeah, whitefish.
Get back to them. So let's see. At the sonar, we've had 165,000 ciscos going by so far. Yesterday, we had 19,000 ciscos go by. So that was the highest day of all season so far. The broad whitefish, we had a total of 14,500 go by the sonar so far. Again, yesterday was the biggest year to date. And humpback whitefish, we've had 443,000 go by the sonar.
Wow.
And that run has been steadily climbing throughout the season. Let's see. Also, 19,500 shefish have gone by. That's the cool thing about that sonar project is it sees all the fish.
It's cool, and if that the drone thing starts kicking in, we'll have probably a better number. We're down to about maybe 2 minutes of our time. Closing remarks, starting with you, Tris, please.
Yeah, Koyana Sam, just hope that people are able to get out, get some silvers, keep getting salmon berries, and our harvest monitors will be surveying communities on Tuesday's drift net opener in the lower Kuskokwim. So if someone asks you a couple questions about your fishing, it really helps us if you answer them. It's all anonymous. Nothing goes to law enforcement or anything. It just helps our managers make better decisions and really know what's going on. So,
Koyana. Sam?
I hope everyone enjoys this beautiful day and catches some coho. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you guys as we have more aerial surveys completed.
Okay, great. Koyana kapani junilgani tamakpje. And next Thursday, same time, hopefully same kind of weather.
Yeah.